Hi and welcome to Saberism's Malicious Life. I'm Ren Levy. A few weeks ago, we had a listener's meetup in New York in Amplify's Brooklyn offices, and as part of that meetup, I gave a talk titled The Source Code of Malicious Life, in which I discussed both how malicious life came to be, a story that goes back to my early 20s when I was a ship's captain in the Israeli Navy, and then about how me and Nate craft the stories that you hear every other week. That last part, I hope, might also be beneficial to those of you, our listeners, who find themselves giving talks about technically complex ideas, cyber-related or not, it doesn't matter. The storytelling ideas and techniques I laid out in the talk are universal, and as you'll shortly hear, you'll find them in blockbuster movies as well as podcast episodes. Cyberreason, our show's sponsor, sent a film crew to document the meetup, so today I'm playing for you the talk, and in a few weeks we should also have the video version as well, which I'll upload to Malicious Life's YouTube channel. That's it for now. Enjoy, and I'll see you on the other side of the talk.
Thank you, Aaron. Okay, people. Yeah, so there's, before I forget, there's swag over there that the good people of Saberreason have sent us, so feel free to take it. Hi. I can't even begin to tell you how excited I am to be here. It's been an amazing journey for me, for the entire team of Malicious Life behind the scenes. And when we started the show like 6 years back, if you would have told me that I'll be in Brooklyn talking to people who came to actually, you know, be together and have a meetup with the listeners, I would be elated. And here we are now. So thank you very much. And a great thank you to Amplify, who took the effort to help us, and personally to Aaron, who volunteered to help us and with the pizzas and everything. I mean, that's amazing. The whole team, yeah. Okay, so what we're going to do now, basically in the next hour or so, is I'm going to give a talk about the history of malicious life, and a good part of that talk is going to be about how to tell a story, which I hope that many of you personally and the people listening to this talk or viewing it on YouTube will find it also very useful in your day-to-day lives, because most of you will probably find yourself in situations like conferences or meetings or meetups or whatever when you want to give a talk and discuss relatively complex technical topics. And presenting ideas is a whole kind of a different skill set than being a good, you know, software developer or an IT person or whatever. So hopefully what I'm going to discuss in this talk is going to help you give better talks next time. So that small patrol boat is an Israeli patrol boat, the Israeli Navy. And a long, long time ago, something like 30 years by now, I was a ship's captain in the Israeli Navy. And you're probably asking yourself what that has to do with podcasting. Well, there are two truths about Israeli patrol boats, which are quite small, as you can see. Actually, these boats were once used by the U.S. Navy in Vietnam. The Israeli Navy bought them probably once there was a surplus in the U.S. Navy, and we used them, and they are quite small. And first, there's no toilet, so it's not a very fun part of the service. But the second part is that as a ship's captain, they teach you in the Naval Academy that you don't do anything by yourself. You're not allowed even basically to, you know, shoot a fire with a firearm or fire the cannon or whatever. You know, watch the radar. You're not supposed to do anything. Your only tool, so to speak, is your voice. So quite rapidly, I learned the harsh truth that the way I carry my voice over the, you know, the internal the system, the PA system in the ship, really matters to how the people on the ship, the soldiers on the ship, the sailors, perceive my, you know, my state of mind and what they should be doing. I mean, imagine like it's 4 a.m. in the morning, everybody is kind of drowsy, and then there's a kind of an alert, and you and it's cold outside, maybe waves and wind and stuff, and nobody likes to, you know, go outside in that kind of weather. And okay, there's a mission to do, there's some sort of an alert you have to attend to. And if the ship's captain kind of takes the PA and starts, "Team, this is the captain speaking," because it's 4 a.m. and you want to go to sleep, everybody's going to be tired and nobody's going to be focused and everybody's going to be basically, they're not going to do their job properly. And then you learn that you have to fake a kind of a captain's voice. So you have to lower your voice an octave. "Ship's captain speaking." And you can kind of get into the vibe of acting as a captain. And over time, it became a sort of a second nature to me to kind of learn to adapt my voice to the situation. It came in handy when I got out of the military. I was in the fire department for a few years. And when you answer a call in the fire department, the person on the other side is usually panicked because there's a fire or some accident or something. And they're, in their minds, they're thinking that on the other side of the line, there's, you know, there's a firefighter, a burly firefighter, probably with lots of hair on his chest. You know, the guy, there's a fantasy going on. And if you pick up the phone and say, "Hi, this is the fire department," they're not going to be confident in your abilities. So you have to lower your voice. "This is the fire department." And then people take you seriously. So that was the beginning of starting to use my voice. Later on, I mean, I've been into technology all of my life. And after I left the military, I learned electrical engineering in Israel. And then I joined a high-tech company. And I kind of learned to kind of blend both my passion for technology and my passion for writing, which is also something that has been part of my life ever since I was like a young teenager. I've been writing about technology and science fiction and all that kind of stuff in Hebrew, in Israel. And in 2006, I published my first book about the history of perpetual motion machines, which is a kind of very interesting topic. And since then, I've actually released two more books. The one on the right is the most relevant to our story because that's a book about, it's called Battle of Minds, and it's about the history of cyber warfare and cybersecurity. And it was in 2012, I think it was published, way before Malicious Life, but it will return in a bit. So when I released my first book, the one on the left, in 2006, it was a kind of a disappointment. I mean, I always wanted to publish a book. Everyone who dreams about becoming an author, that's a great moment in their lives. But it tanked. I mean, it was on the bookshelves for, I don't know, 3-4 months, and then it didn't sell so well, and it kind of tanked. The sales were not so good, and nobody read it, almost. I got, I think, only 2 paper letters, one of them saying the book is bad. So it wasn't a great experience, which got me, yeah, I mean, it's a bummer. You've been working on a book for like 3-4 years, and it doesn't take off. And back in 2006, I was already a listener, an avid podcast listener. And because the book wasn't a great success, I was looking for a way to maybe capitalize on all the effort of writing the book. So I started a podcast in Hebrew called Making History about the history of science and technology, which basically is the same stuff that I used to write about. And what do you know? It took off. I mean, it's these kinds of accidents that happen sometimes. It turned out that when I started that podcast in 2007, podcasting was only beginning to be kind of taking off. And in Israel, it was almost non-existent. I was probably one of only 10 or 20 podcasts in general. But because I had already an experience in writing about science and technology, I was an experienced author, plus I had the ability to convey my ideas with my voice, within a couple of months it took off and really changed my life. I started being invited to TV shows and I became sort of a mini celebrity in Israel of sorts. But it still took me, I think, about 6 more years until 2015, 2016 to quit my day job as an engineer and start a podcasting production company called PI Media with a business partner who I met as a listener of Making History. And we started the company, and it grew nicely, and we had, I think at the maximum, we had like probably 20 to 30 different podcasts being produced simultaneously, which is quite a lot for a small country like Israel. And then, I think it was in 2016, probably, Cybereason is a cybersecurity company, a vendor, and it's an American-Israeli company. It was founded by 4 Israeli friends, good friends from the military, and they started Cybereason, and then they moved their headquarters to the United States. So it became sort of an Israeli-American company. And they were listeners of Making History. And I think one of them wrote to me one day asking if I could do the same podcast that I did in Hebrew, Making History, in English, but on cybersecurity, which I found to be a fascinating challenge. Because think about it, back in 2016, I was already a well-known podcaster in Israel. But that's to a very specific audience in a very specific language. I asked myself, could I do the same thing that I did 10 years ago in a different language, in a different topic, which is a relatively, I mean, think about it for a second. Cybersecurity is a very interesting topic to write about because there's lots of action and drama and you know, crime and stuff. It's very interesting, but it's also highly technical. You have to explain really sometimes difficult ideas. Could I do the same thing in a different language where nobody knows me and succeed again? Maybe I was just lucky the first time. So I took it as a kind of a personal challenge. So before we started Malicious Life, I took something like 4 or 5 months off, and I just concentrating on learning to speak English from the beginning again. I mean, I always read in English, and I listen to podcasts in English, but speaking English is not something that you do on a day-to-day basis. And I was very lucky that Nate Nelson, who is sitting here, joined PI Media, I think in 2017 or 2016, right? As an intern. And once we learned that he's a native English speaker, I said, that's a great addition to the Malicious Life team. And it turned out that he's one hell of a writer, probably the best writer. I mean, I'm not saying that just because he's sitting here. You can go away now, sorry. But really, I mean, one of the greatest writers that I've ever had the privilege of working with. And the podcast started to take off relatively, really fast. I mean, a few months after we started, we already had a few thousand listeners all over the world. And I think that at the height that we reached was probably, I think it was number 11 on iTunes technology chart.
Yeah.
In the United States, I mean, being number 11 in Apple podcast charts, for somebody who's not into podcasting, probably seems like, okay, so whatever. But really for somebody like me, who's not a native English speaker, operating in a very specific niche, you know, of technology, it's like, you know, playing in the NBA. It's like, it's a big thing. So I was very, very honored to be in that position. Of course, the past 6 years has been a great ride, a very interesting adventure. I got to meet interesting people like Steve Wozniak, which I interviewed on stage in another Cybereason sponsored event. You know, it's a fantastic journey. Really, it was one of the most exciting experiences of my life. So this is kind of the background of how malicious life came to be. And this next part of the talk is discussion about how we tell the stories that we tell. What's the secret sauce, or we should say the source code, of malicious life? Because many of our listeners are from the technology sector. Many of them will have, as I said in the beginning, will need, probably at some point in their professional careers, to stand in front of audiences and try to convey rather complex ideas. And you've probably, most of you, if not all of you, have been to conferences, and you know how difficult it is to get people to listen to what you have to say for 30 minutes or so. It's, people are usually with their phones, you know, and it's easy to escape, to take your attention somewhere else. Luckily, there are several basic principles of storytelling, and if you use these principles, you're almost guaranteed to have an interesting talk, to have the opportunity to get your ideas across, no matter how complex, how difficult they are to understand. So, the basic premise of malicious life is the same one I've been using in my career as a podcaster for the past 16, 17 years, is telling stories. It might sound obvious, but if you think about most of the podcasts you listen to, they tend to convey technical information the same way that Wikipedia does, laying down the facts, maybe chronological kind of a flow of idea, but it's mostly around facts and ideas and not about plot, characters, drama, etc. So as Robert McKee, who wrote a very famous book called Story, likes to say, storytelling is the most powerful way to put ideas into the world. And from my experience, he's absolutely right. If you want people to listen to what you have, what you want to say, you got to tell a story.
The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have, the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. And so to reduce costs and headaches, small businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial, management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required and accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite, and you improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/malicious. netsuite.com/malicious. netsuite.com/malicious.
Let's talk about the first principle. So the first and most important element of storytelling is the conflict. In fact, there is no story if there is no conflict. Think about it. Every movie you've seen, every TV series, every book you've read, there's always a conflict. The only place where you won't get a conflict is encyclopedia. If you want to make your idea interesting, try to incorporate it into a conflict. Now, it's easy to say use a conflict when you're maybe creating a movie about whatever, right? There are humans there. There's the hitman who's trying to kill the innocent victim. Or there's the angry cop trying to bring down the mafia headman or whatever. So when you're creating a fictitious story, it's rather easy to think about the conflict. But that's not what is going on in our lives, right? I mean, in our lives, we usually, when we try to convey an idea in a conference or whatever, these are usually, you know, lame or bland ideas about technology. There's no big drama or conflict inherent, or we might say that there are no people that are part of that conflict. I mean, if it's a new technology we want to introduce to our listeners, there's nobody trying to kill anybody else, right? That's real life. So what do we do? Luckily, that's not what conflicts are really about. Real conflicts, or almost every conflict that you encounter, is not conflict between people. It's a conflict between opposing ideas. Let's give a few examples. Star Wars. Probably Star Wars is quite famous that most of us have heard about it or watched it. What is the conflict in Star Wars? On the surface, it's the conflict between, let's say, the character of Luke Skywalker against the character of Darth Vader. But if you think about it, that's not what Star Wars is about. There's a deeper conflict. That conflict is about what is the best way to rule a galaxy. Is it with cooperation and everybody working together, which is the rebel way, what Luke Skywalker represents, or his character represents, and the opposite view that you can only control a galaxy by using fear and violence, which is what the character of Darth Vader tries to represent, right? And that's the basic idea of a conflict. And you can use that same principle in your cases as well. As an example, say I want to give a talk about electric cars, right? Battery-operated cars, and that new technology and its advantages and disadvantages. I could discuss that technology, and it would be okay-ish, but if I want to place it in a kind of a context of a conflict, I would probably place it in a conflict against a very opposing idea, which is gasoline-powered vehicle, right? I mean, these are the two competing ideas right now. It's not an emotional, probably very highly emotional-driven conflict, but it is a conflict nonetheless. And that would automatically make my presentation much more interesting. And another great example is the Terminator movie series, Arnold Schwarzenegger. Again, there is, on the surface, a kind of a conflict between maybe Sarah Connor and the Terminator. But that's not the real conflict. The real conflict, or the basic conflict, is who is the best life form on Earth? Is it the humans, the flesh, and you know the blood and flesh, or is it the robots, the so-called superior life form? So there's always a conflict. And we're making use of it, of course, in malicious life all the time. Usually we have the advantage of sometimes we can use actual real-life characters and kind of pit them one against the other. There's the detective, there's the security analyst, and there's the hacker who tries to hack something. So if we can, we'll go for it. That's our go-to technique of inserting a conflict. But sometimes there isn't. I mean, maybe, you know, a kind of an example, one of the episodes we did, I think, half a year ago, bug bounty programs. That's a rather emotionally kind of flat topic. There's not a lot of drama going on. But when we dug deeper into that, into the research, we found the conflict. I mean, there is a basic conflict in each and every company that thinks about implementing a bug bounty program between two opposing ideas. One is having a bug bounty program, but the other is just doing the internal QA without any bug bounty program, and that's also a valid idea. And there, if you listen to that episode, you'll see there's always the back and forth between these two opposing ideas. Why is bug bounty a good idea? But then why is an internal QA program a great idea? There's always a kind of a conflict going on. Another episode which I did, I think, in a year and a half ago, the Voynich manuscript. It's an episode about a manuscript which was found like 150 years ago, something like that, and nobody knows its content. And again, there are no stories about people actually being involved in such a conflict in the context of the manuscript. But there is a tension or a conflict between the people who think that the manuscript does have some sort of a meaning, a hidden meaning, and the people who think, nah, this is just a scam, it's not a real manuscript. So that's something that you need to remember when you're trying to present your ideas to the world. Always try to find the opposing idea. And now we're talking about how to present the opposing idea. I'm not too much into hockey, because Israel, let's say the hockey scene in Israel is not that powerful, so we don't have hockey as a very popular sport, to say the least. But I'm guessing that some of you here might recognize this picture. Where is that picture taken from? You have any idea? Miracle on Ice, exactly. It's a game between the U.S. hockey team and the Soviet hockey team in 1980. I think it was part of the Olympics, I'm not that sure. But it is famous enough so that the guy here knew that picture just from looking at it, and even though it happened, like what, 43, 44 years ago. Now, why do we remember the Miracle on Ice? Is it the biggest win of the U.S. team in terms of the number of goals scored? No, it was, I think it ended 4-3 or something like that. But why do people still remember that game as being, if you ask a hockey fan, it was the greatest victory ever for the U.S. team. Why? The Giant, exactly. The U.S. team won against the Soviet team, which back then was the Goliath of hockey, and the U.S. team was rather amateurish back then. And having an amateurish team scores a big victory against the Soviet team in such an important international event, that was something else, right? And I think that that name, Goliath, is not accidental. Where is that name taken from? The victory of David against Goliath. Why do we remember that story? Why is it such a powerful story that it still sticks in our collective memories for 4,000 years? Because there is something very powerful in having the opposing idea, or the opposing person, character, or the opposing idea be as powerful as it gets. And you'll see that same idea in all the greatest movies of all times, for example. Think about how Darth Vader, for example, is presented in Star Wars. The character of Darth Vader is as scary as possible. This is the opening scene of the first movie. There is a corridor filled with smoke, and everybody is shooting lasers at each other. Of course, nobody is hitting from the Empire side, only the rebels are hitting, but that's irrelevant. And everybody is kind of hiding behind the walls because it's a scary environment, nobody wants to die. And then the door slides open and Darth Vader walks into that death corridor as if nothing is happening, grabs the rebel leader by the throat and picks him up. What the director, George Lucas, was trying to tell us in that scene was, that's one bad mother. He wants us to know that Darth Vader is as dangerous as villains get. And you get that same idea in the opening scene, I think that's the opening scene from the second Terminator movie, where you see Arnold Schwarzenegger. First, he's in the movie, he's teleported from the future into the present, and he is teleported naked, okay, and he walks naked into the first bar that he sees, and outside of the pub, the bar, we see bikes, Harley Davidson bikes, signaling that this is the kind of Hell's Angels joint kind of place, like you don't want to enter it if you don't have a choice, and Schwarzenegger enters the place naked. Nobody in their right mind would go naked into a bar. I mean, we're all humans, the viewers, the director, the actors, There's a kind of a basic premise that you don't go naked into a bar unless you don't care. You're psychotic, in a sense. I mean, he's a robot. Okay, but you have to be nuts to walk naked into a crowded place. So he doesn't care. That's one. The second, he goes to the scariest leader of the Hell's Angels and starts roughing him up. Okay, you don't do that unless you're basically non-human. And that's exactly what the director was trying to show us. This character is as bad as it gets. And why did they choose this the way of presenting their characters? That's something that we need to keep in mind, because that's probably the number one error that many presenters do when they try to present their ideas in professional conferences. We tend to think to ourselves that once we were given the opportunity to discuss our ideas, we need to hide the opposing ideas. Like, for example, I have a new product coming out, or maybe I have a new technology that I want to introduce to the audience. I don't want to talk about another company's product and give them the space, because this is my time on the stage right now. I don't want to give them my precious opportunity, right? But if you want your presentation to be memorable and to have the attention and people really to listen to what you want to say, if you learn anything from these movies, is that you don't hide the opposing idea. You make it as powerful and as convincing as you can. It's a well-known cliche in the movie business that the movie is only as good as the villain character is. It's not about the protagonist, the good guy. It helps if that good guy is also a great character. But all the really great movies are the ones with the great villains, like Hannibal Lecter and all these memorable villains, right? So if you want people to listen to what you have to say, don't hide the opposite idea. Do the exact opposite. Make it as powerful and as engaging as you can, as convincing as you can. But then there's a paradox. If I want to convince the audience that my idea is correct, wouldn't taking the opposite idea and making it big and strong do the exact opposite? Do I want to convince them that I'm wrong and they're the opposite idea is right? Of course not. We want to make those opposing ideas as high as we can, to raise them as high as we can, only to have them fall back down. That's again going back to David against Goliath. Goliath is big, is strong, but he has a weakness. In the biblical story, he is struck by a stone in the exact location where he needs to be struck, and then he dies. And that kind of happens in each and every movie and TV series that you see. The villain is always scary, but they have their shortcomings. They have their, the places where they fall, where they come short. And we need to identify the opposing ideas, vulnerability, where it's not as good as it could be, and concentrate our efforts there during the talk to show how our idea is better. And the more you manage to raise the opposing idea and then let it fall down, the better your idea is presented and is memorable, and you'll be able to convince the audience that you're right. Okay, we did that in just the two latest episode that came out in Malicious Life, were about Kevin Mitnick, very well-known hacker, and I carefully selected scenes out of Mitnick's life, which he did lots and lots of interesting stuff, but I chose specific scenes of his life to make sure that you, the listeners, get a sense of how good of a hacker he actually was. Well, I think one of the most memorable ones, at least for me, when I read his autobiography, was the FBI donuts scene, where the FBI is planning to arrest Mitnick, and because he hacked into the cell phone network, he was able to discover that their agents are actually on their way to his house, and he bought donuts and put them in the fridge with the note saying FBI donuts, that when the FBI agent opened the fridge, they saw the FBI donuts. This is a very powerful scene, because who does that? I mean, you have to be really good to be able to pull something like that off. And that was my intention. I mean, Kevin Mitnick, he is the bad guy in the story, right? I could have chosen to present him as someone who is not a very good hacker, and there are actually people who are saying that as a hacker, Mitnick was rather average, except for his excellent social engineering skills. And that's a valid point. But you want to make the story very interesting, you want to stress the points and the ideas which make Mitnick a great hacker, only to have him fall down when he hacks the wrong person. I won't spoil the episode for you if you haven't heard him, but when he hacks the wrong person, he falls down. So this is something that you want to keep in mind when you're doing your presentations.
They're coming for it. Your personal data, your intellectual property, your business. Cyber attackers are working to take what belongs to you and holding you to ransom. Defenders don't fear ransomware. They end it. With Cyber Reason, defenders detect and stop ransomware that even others miss every time. This is not just a product, it's a mission. Cyber Reason gives you the upper hand against ransomware and all other cyber attacks. At Cyber Reason, we don't fear ransomware. We end it. Learn more at cyberreason.com/ransom.
On to the next idea. Again, I'm hoping I'm not spoiling Star Wars for you, okay? There is a very interesting, a very important plot point, and if you've never heard it before, then too bad. It's been 50 years, people. If you haven't watched Star Wars, then I'm going to ruin the movies for you, probably. That we learned that Darth Vader is Luke Skywalker's father. Okay. But why did the director, Lucas, choose to hide that fact from us, the viewers? He could have, if he wanted to, he could have told us that fact right in the first scene of the first movie, but he chose not to. The answer is obvious, because in the first movie and the first part of the second movie, we get a sense that there's something going on between these two characters, which is, it's deeper than the surface tension between two opposing people, one in the Empire, one is a rebel. No, there's something more to it. The way that Vader treats Luke Skywalker when he captures him, the way that he speaks about him to the Emperor, whatever. There's something off, but we can't, at that point, we can't put up finger about what's wrong, except that there's something bugging us. And then, when we discover the truth about their relationship, it kind of twists the old plot, and now there's another kind of energy flowing into the narrative, and things get much more interesting. We should learn from that technique something very important, to be stringent with information. And again, this is a very common error that a lot of speakers do when they try to present their ideas. We are on stage, we are trying to convey information. Should we be stringent with information? Should we keep the information to ourselves? That's counterintuitive. We want to put the ideas to the world. We want to talk about it. But our greatest asset in when we are trying to convey an idea is the audience curiosity. If they're not curious about what we're going to say, they won't listen. That's the whole point of telling a good story. Keep the audience curious about what's going to happen next. So you don't want to reveal important information until the point when the audience asks why. Say that, for example, we're talking about, as I said, electric vehicles, and we're pitting them against gasoline-powered vehicles. And we could start the talk with, you know, statistics about how good are electric vehicles to the environment or how efficient they are. But that's not the point. We should think about when will the audience want to learn these statistics. Because if we just say them and people are not curious about them, They won't listen. Or they listen to 2 minutes and then they'll just, you know, go over to their phones and start browsing TikTok or WhatsApp or whatever, right? So think about it. When will be a good time to present that kind of information? Maybe I should start with why electric vehicles have caught on in a certain situation and describe maybe a country which tried to implement such and such technology and it worked out where it never worked out before. And then when people hear about that case, they start asking themselves, why did it work out when it never worked out before? Or why did it work, that specific technology, succeed in that situation or that country when it didn't in other cases? And when people are asking themselves why, then you start giving them the answers. Well, that's that statistic and that characteristic of the technology, et cetera, et cetera. So you don't give the whole information right off the bat. You keep it to yourself until the audience asks why. If you fail to do that, the only thing you're going to achieve is getting the audience to be frustrated because they are not receptive to the information that you want to give them. Maybe the final or next to the final idea or principle is to know your audience, right? One of the, I think, again, a very common error that speakers make when they're trying to present their ideas in conference, etc., is they don't really think about the people they're talking to. And that's something that I, as a podcaster and as a writer, have to do constantly because we have, as an example, listeners who are experienced cybersecurity analysts, and there are the novices and the people who just, you know, came out of university. There's a great difference in knowledge in the experience that these two people have, and yet they are both valid listeners or valid audiences for Malicious Life. There also are people who are, you know, outside of cybersecurity, just, you know, curious people who are from other areas and other fields of human endeavor, and they don't really know, they are very curious, but they are not from the field. So when you're talking to these people, you have to first and foremost decide who is the audience and try to recognize these knowledge gaps. In the case of Malicious Life, we said, okay, we assume as an axiom of sorts that the people listening to us are knowledgeable about computers, the internet, and technology. We don't assume that they know Python or that they know JavaScript in specific, but they're not the kind of audience to be scared if you mention a programming language, right? I mean, these are people who are in a certain minimal level of technical know-how. But it's not too high. You can't really assume that every idea that you, I mean, some people would probably, for them, an idea of what does, I don't know, what does an antivirus software do, they know it. I mean, they've been in cybersecurity for a long time. You can't assume that for every kind of audience. So when we're writing an episode and we're discussing ideas, we are constantly trying to keep in check the knowledge gaps that we're aiming for. If I think that I'm aiming too high, I'll probably go a step back and try to explain a more basic idea before hitting the main idea. And that's something that's very, very, very important in the context of conferences and meetups, etc., because then the audience that you're facing is relatively, it's not all the people are from the exact same type. So you have to take into consideration what do the people know and what they don't know. If you miss it and you talk too high or too low, your presentation won't work. And the last point is to avoid professional jargon. And think about it for a second. What is the purpose of jargon? When we're talking about jargon, we're talking about professional words. I mean, in physics, for example, if I can say to someone the theory about how light travels and how space warps and how time dilates, but I can just say relativity, and another physicist will probably understand exactly what I'm trying to say, right? I mean, he's a physicist, I'm a physicist, we understand each other. So talking in professional jargon is a kind of a way to compress ideas and then convey it to the people you're talking to. But that's the exact opposite of what we're trying to achieve when we're telling a story or trying to explain ideas. If we use professional jargon, there's a great chance that we will lose our audience if they are not truly versed in that jargon. So that's a very important principle to remember. Never use professional lingo unless you have to. If you have to, okay, because sometimes you want people to also learn the correct term or the right word for something, okay, do that. Only after you explain the idea behind it and make sure that the audience knows about your idea. I think that's it, probably. And thank you to Nate, my co-conspirator for the last 5-6 years already. Thank you very much. And we should mention Shelley, who is not here. She's still in Israel, but she's the producer of the show. She makes sure that we're on schedule and we're following our deadlines. And she also does the sound editing of the podcast. Anything else? Anybody else I forgot? Danny, the CEO of the company, my partner, business partner. And that's it, I think. Thank you very much, people.
That's it for this episode. Thank you for listening. Shout out to the wonderful listeners who I had the pleasure to meet in the meetup, to Ina, Alexander, Felix, Stalin, Taris, Terry, Daniel, and of course, Aaron and the whole team at Amplify. I hope to meet you again soon in a future meetup. Malicious Life is produced by PI Media. Our team includes Nate Nelson and Shelley Guetta, and our website is malicious.life. You can follow us on Twitter at @maliciouslife or follow me at @ranlevi. That's R-A-N-L-E-V-I. Thanks to Cyber Reason for underwriting the podcast. Learn more at cyberreason.com. Bye-bye. Oh my God. Oh my God. CK Music.